Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Sun Broken, a Wild Hunt novel by Yasmin Gallinorn. Narrated by Cassandra Campbell. Chapter 1. The new moon had just passed, and the only sign of her presence was a thin crescent as she moved into her waxing cycle. I gazed up at the sliver of light as I waited beside the massive maple tree in the park. The leaves were almost full size, and they whispered lightly in the April night. We were into a warm streak, with the days running in their high 60s and the nights in the upper 50s. Beltane was nearing, a little over 2 weeks away, and I could feel the energy build, especially when I was around Hearn. It had been a year since he had come into my world and changed everything in my life. I turned at a low huffing sound, and there he stood, my magnificent god, in his altar shape. The silver stag glimmered, brilliant and luminous, his back as tall as me, antlers rising like silver tines against the shroud of darkness that surrounded us. He slowly approached me, and I bowed my head. I always felt his divinity more when he was in his stag form. He leaned down to breathe against my cheek, and the scent of his musk swept over me. I threw my arms around his neck, gazing into those slow eyes, and pressed my face against his throat. "I love you," I whispered. "I cannot believe how much I've come to love you." He gently stepped away from me, kneeling onto his front knees. I swung up onto his back and leaned forward, bracing myself with my hands on either side of his neck. He stood, waiting for me to give him the signal. When I was properly situated, I said, "I'm ready." And we were off, racing through the woods under the pale moonlight. Hearn wove through the trees toward a ravine, and down we went, through the undergrowth, a blur of movement. In his silver stag form, Hearn could move faster than any normal stag or elk. This was his domain. The forest was his world, and as lord of the hunt, he ruled over it with his father, Cernunnos, the lord of the forest. Together they embodied the woodlands of the world, and their presence was within every leaf of every tree, every animal that called the forest home. They embodied the wild and ran with the wild hunt. And Hearn was my boyfriend. That last thought made me laugh. It seemed so mortal. But the gods shared a number of traits with mortals, with the fae, with the humans and shifters alike. And when I had gone to work for the wild hunt, the agency, not the actual hunt, a year ago, I had quickly fallen for Hearn, and he had, against all odds, fallen for me. I wasn't sure how long we had been running. It could have been 5 minutes or 20, but Hearn pulled to a stop next to a trickling stream. The greater Seattle area was rife with both ravines and streams, and the forest wild permeated the cities around the area with tenacious fingers, large swaths spreading beneath the condos and skyscrapers, shading the spacious streets of the city. The grass and weeds continuously broke through the concrete on sidewalks, jutting up through the cracks to prove that nothing man-made could keep the wild at bay for long. Hearn kneeled, and I slid off his back, my thighs warm from pressing against his sides. I wandered over to the stream, kneeling beside the bank. The water played like music, and I could sense there were several elementals nearby, dancing through the eddies and swirls that splashed over the stones at the bottom of the stream bed. Here in western Washington, almost all creeks trickled over a bed of the rounded river rocks that had been left in the wake of the alluvial deposits. As I reached toward the white caps, a spray of water rose up, forming into a translucent being that was vaguely humanoid. It reached out and touched my fingers, and I closed my eyes as we met. "I know you. You are one of the water fae." The thought came unspoken, filling my mind. Only it wasn't a thought in words, but in emotions, a sense of familiarity. I smiled at the gentle mind touch. "Like recognizes like. I am part Lanin Shi, I answered. How are things here in the park? Is everything going as it should? I patterned the thoughts into emotions and images that the water elemental would understand. Hearn and I were reconnoitering. We had heard rumors that there were unnatural forces stirring in the park. Given the current state of affairs, we had decided to check it out for ourselves. There was too much at stake to just hope for the best or rely on rumor. The elemental paused. Then I felt a quiver of fear coming from it. I have seen nothing unusual, but something is approaching. There are those who have rested in the arms of the forest for many years, deep in their death sleep, who are now slumbering uneasily. Their bodies are long gone, but their spirits are approaching a wakeful state. What lures them out of their long sleep, I do not know. And with that, the water spirit dove into the stream and flowed back into the current. And within seconds, it was gone.
What did it say?
Hearn asked from behind me. I turned to face him. He was in his human shape now, rugged and gorgeous, with shoulder-length hair the color of wheat that was approaching his mid-back. I'd asked him to let it grow. I loved a man with long hair, and Hearn wore it well. He had a 5 o'clock shadow, the stubble making his jaw look even stronger, and his eyes were cornflower blue. He was wearing a pair of dark jeans and a leather jacket over a dark blue muscle shirt. His belt buckle, a silver stag, gleamed in the dim light from the sliver of moon overhead. I had given it to him on Valentine's Day, and he wore it constantly now. He was wearing motorcycle boots with chains and studs. According to the elemental, the spirits who have made their rest in the park are waking up. From what I gathered, given the images it showed to me, these are mostly spirits of Native Americans who died on this land before any settlers came in. Though there are also some of the settlers here, and a few people who've been murdered here. They're all spirits who should have moved on, who should be long gone. As to what's responsible for waking them up, I have no idea, and neither did the water spirit. I rubbed my chin, glancing around us. The Seattle area had been inhabited for at least 4,000 years, first by the earliest Coast Salish natives, and then, starting in the mid-1800s, by European settlers coming in. Plenty of people had lived and died in the area. Hearn regarded me gravely.
Typhon?
I pressed my lips together, then let out a sigh. Probably.
Reports are coming in from Myleaky's Arrow, Odin's Chase, and all the other agencies like ours. This is happening worldwide. Typhon may still be in the process of waking, but his reach is extending out to affect all areas of the world.
Hearn sat down on a nearby boulder, frowning.
We knew this was coming.
I know. I didn't want to think about it, but we had to face the fact that we were running on borrowed time. It wouldn't be long, and the world would be a chaotic mess when the dead returned, in both spirit and physical form. And all we could do was wait and take care of the collateral damage when it arose.
Come here.
He held out his arms. I sat on his knee, leaning against him as he wrapped his arms around me. He reached up to kiss my nose, the warmth of his breath stirring my blood. I moaned gently as his tongue slid between my lips, and he shifted, lifting me into his arms as he stood. He carried me over to a mossy bank beside the stream and lay me down, kneeling beside me.
"Jeans off," he whispered. I unbuckled my belt and unzipped, sliding my jeans down along with my underwear.
As I tugged them off over my boots, he whipped off his belt, then followed suit, his jeans down by his knees. He was facing me as I lay back on the grass, his eyes glowing in the darkness surrounding us. The fire rose inside me, and I pulled up my shirt and began to finger my nipples beneath the lace of my bra. Hearn let out a wicked laugh and knelt between my thighs, his tongue searching for my center, bathing me lightly at first and then harder. I caught my breath and reached down to tangle my fingers in his hair. He wrapped his hands around my hips, holding me firmly as the swirl of his tongue drove the fire higher. I moaned, wanting to feel him inside me, wanting him to drive the length of his shaft deep into my core. "Fuck me," I whispered, reaching down to pull him up. Hearn's eyes glinted, shining as they began to glow. He let out a low grunt and grabbed hold of me, rolling so I was on top. I slid down on his shaft, dropping my head back as I braced myself against him, hand to hand. I laughed, feeling wanton and powerful. And as I began to ride him, he laughed again, lifting me up as he thrust to meet me. I let go of his hands and he clasped my waist.
"Touch yourself," he ordered.
I reached down with one hand to slide my fingers across my clit, and with my other I cupped my breast, shaking my hair out to stream down my back. I rode him hard, and as the stars began to wheel overhead, I felt dizzy with our passion. With one swift move, he smoothly rolled me over, still inside me, and began to drive himself deep into me, his chest pressed against mine.
"You're mine, love. You belong to me," he said, his voice husky.
His eyes were glowing fully now, and he began to thrust in earnest, driving me hard against the soft moss below us. The scent of spring soil rose to greet us, mixed with the spray of the stream. The smell of wild roses surrounded us, heady and intoxicating. I closed my eyes, merging into the energy of the hunt. Hearn was everywhere around me, and the feel of the forest called to my blood, to my heritage. I let go, spiraling into the web we wove between us. The magic of our sex built the world anew each time we came together. As we renewed our passion and our love, I could sense the journey stretching out ahead of us. It was still new, but I had set foot on a road from which I couldn't turn away. I had made my decision, and nothing in the world would ever be the same.
"Ember, my love,"
he whispered as he gave one final thrust and then stiffened, pinning me to the earth below. I let go even as he did, catapulting as the waves dragged me under. As I sank into the orgasm, the world expanded, the storm shaking me to the core. I burst into tears, overwhelmed, and pulled him tightly against me. Hearn rested his head on my breast, breathing hard as the ripples of our climax began to subside. After a moment, he raised his head, his hair tickling me as it trailed down to caress my skin.
"Never leave me," he whispered. "Stay with me, Ember. Please."
I gazed deep into his eyes, and right there, right then, I realized that I had everything I wanted in my life. "I don't plan on going anywhere," I whispered back, kissing him on the nose. "I don't think I could leave if I wanted to. You and I are too tightly bound for me to leave you. You've become a part of my life, a part of my world, a part of me." He kissed me again, and we rested in the shade of the forest, as the stars continued to wheel overhead in the darkened sky. On our way back to his house, I found my thoughts returning to the park. Even though I had been focused on sex, the moment we dressed, I began to notice the energy that the elemental had warned us about. The forest felt uneasy, and though the magic from our union had calmed the immediate area, it didn't take long for it to begin to feel agitated again. "Can you feel it?" I asked. Hearn gave me a solemn nod.
"Actually, yes. The forest is ill at ease. I'll come out later and speak to the trees, see if they have anything to tell me." He shook his head. "I fear we haven't even begun to see the effects that Typhon will bring with him."
Typhon was the father of dragons, a titan who had been cast into stasis thousands of years ago, but now had managed to shake himself out of his slumber. And as he woke, the dead would follow him, returning from the spirit world to enter ours. For he was born of Tartarus, the god who meted out punishment to the dead. We had been preparing for Typhon's arrival for several months, ever since Cernunnos and Morgana had first warned us of his approach. While we at the Wild Hunt Agency couldn't take him on, we were assigned to take care of collateral damage while the gods worked together to find a way to drive him back into stasis. So far, they didn't have a clue on how to do that.
Come, let's get home before sunrise,
Hearn said, stepping back from me. I shielded my eyes as he transformed into his stag self. The light was so bright that it almost blinded me. As he knelt for me again to straddle his back, I couldn't help but wonder how many nights we would have left to run free in the woods and make love under the stars. How long before Typhon stretched out his wings to cover the light? And how much longer before our days and our nights were spent chasing down the dead? But at least Hearn would be at my side, and for that I was ever grateful. My name is Ember Kearney, and I'm a Treyleth. That's an ugly word that I've reclaimed. I'm half Dark Fae and half Light Fae, and according to the Fae Courts, never the twain should meet. But they did, in the forms of my father, who was Dark Fae, and my mother, who belonged to the Light Court. When I was 15, they were murdered for daring to love across borders, and as the product of their love, I was considered untouchable in the Fae Courts. A half-breed who shouldn't exist. As far as I was concerned, they could all go fuck themselves. My parents' family had been in on the double murder, and I had no use for any of them, save for one uncle whom I had only recently met. Until a year ago, I had set myself up as a freelance investigator slash bounty hunter, but then life had intervened. In the space of both 24 hours, both I and my best friend, Angel, had gone from struggling to make our way in the world to being employed by Hearn, who ran the Wild Hunt Agency. My official job was to help keep peace between the Fae Courts, or at least helping to contain the collateral damage, which seemed terribly ironic given my heritage. But that job had expanded. And now, in addition to keeping the ever-warring factions from offing innocent people with their petty sparring, we had branched out to face the coming darkness. And somehow, within a very short time, Hearn and I had been drawn together, and I was learning what it meant to be the consort of a god. And to complicate matters, I was pledged to his mother, Morgana, a goddess of the Fae and of the sea. And my father had been pledged to Hearn's father, Kernunos. In the past year, I had seen things I never dreamed existed, and I had passed through the Cruachach, a ritual all members of Fae undergo as a rite of passage when they come of age. A lot had changed in a single year, but even with the coming shadow, I wouldn't alter anything that had happened. For the first time in my life, I belonged to something bigger than myself. I had my own home. I had friends who formed an extended family, and I had found love. And all the darkness in the world couldn't overshadow all of that. I yawned and dragged myself under the shower. I didn't like pulling all-nighters, but we had no other choice than to check out reports when they came in. It was 7 a.m., and we needed to dress and head into work. After soaping all the grime off, I blasted myself with cold water and almost shrieked, but it shocked my system enough to drive the brain fog away. After toweling off and blow-drying my hair, which had grown noticeably longer over the past year, I dressed in a spare outfit I had left at Hearn's, a blue corset over black jeans. I fastened a silver belt around my waist and zipped up my stiletto ankle boots. I didn't anticipate needing to go gallivanting around the forest today, and if the need did arise, I kept a spare pair of boots at work, one more suitable for tromping in the woods.
Triple shot mocha?
Hearn asked as I entered the kitchen. While I showered and dressed, he had grilled ham and cheese sandwiches and was now pulling shots of espresso. Quint shot, please. I need more caffeine than that to make it through the day. All-nighters aren't that easy, even for the Fae. We don't all have the constitution of a god. I stuck out my tongue at him. He playfully returned the gesture.
Fine. 5 shots. Seriously, though, if you need a nap, you can come in late.
He didn't even look winded. No, that wouldn't be fair to the others. I'll manage, though I may grab a few winks this afternoon, if we're not run ragged. I paused, sniffing. I could still smell his musky scent from where I was standing. Not to be indelicate, but don't you need a shower before we go? I love your scent, but...
But I'm a little funky for the office.
I was going to use the word rank, but yeah, that works, I said, grinning.
He laughed and handed me my drink. You eat, and I'll have a quick rinse.
He headed for the bedroom. I slid onto a tall stool at the kitchen island, taking a long sip of the iced mocha before devouring my breakfast. I was still hungry when I finished, so I poked through the cupboards and found a box of donuts. Hearn kept plenty of snacks around for me. The gods didn't need to eat nearly as much as the Fae or even humans, but he liked food and made sure his fridge was well-stocked. I had finished my second one and was on my third when he re-entered the room, clean-shaven, tidy, and smelling like fresh rain.
Yum! The new bath wash you bought does the trick.
I polished off the rest of the donut.
I left your sandwich alone.
How generous, he said, catching me by the waist and pulling me in for a long kiss. He swatted my ass. All right, love, let's get this show on the road.
As we gathered our things and headed out to the car, I paused, staring at the sky. It was a clear morning and the sun was shining, but there seemed to be a pall over the city. With a sinking feeling, I realized it wasn't smog. It was an energetic cloud hanging low and ponderous. I could sense when a storm was about to break, and right now I could sense a dark one on the horizon. Suddenly pensive, I kept my thoughts to myself as we headed downtown.
Chapter 2.
Downtown Seattle was bustling. The Seattle area only got about 65 cloud-free days a year, and full sunshine was so rare that almost everybody was out and about, taking advantage of the good weather. The streets were packed with early shoppers and people on their way to work. Most of the big corporations, especially the high-tech industry, allowed flex time, so the early morning crowd was sizable. Seattle was a vibrant city, and its nickname, the Emerald City, was well-deserved. The tree-lined streets were wide and spacious, although riddled with potholes. The city grew upward rather than out, due to the limited confines of the shoreline. So skyscrapers dominated the skyline, and a dizzying array of sleek new office buildings interwove with the old red brick walk-ups and the concrete behemoths. Down on the docks, the ferries chugged in from across Puget Sound, ferrying in commuters. Only a block or so away from the harbor, the Viaduct Market, once known as Pike Place Market, held sway over the downtown area. Like an enclosed bazaar, hundreds of vendors set up their daily markets, selling everything from flowers to food to clothing to services. The Wild Hunt was in Old Town, which had originally been known as the Pioneer Square area. The five-story brick walk-up was on First Avenue, a wide, tree-lined street that was home to a number of the Streeps, the ever-present street people who chose, either unwillingly or willingly, to make the city itself their home. They slept in homeless shelters or crashed at the flop houses or hunkered down in the back alleys. And during the day, they panhandled, offering music or dancing or other talents for their money. We knew a number of the locals by name, and they were mostly good sorts, though a few were lost in a fog, and even fewer were dangerous. Across the street from the five-story walk-up that housed the agency was an array of fetish brothels, all legal, offering all sorts of kink for a price. They were kept busy, but we never had any trouble from the sex workers or their clients. Tattoo shops, delis, and small restaurants were interspersed among the sex-for-hire shops, and a pot shop had recently joined the lineup. MJ's house brought in a lot of business for everybody, given the combinations of pot and sex and pot and food, were irresistible. We jogged up the concrete stairs leading to the main floor of the building. Recently, the owner of the building had, by order of the city, begun installing a handicapped access ramp to the side. When done, it would curve around to the left like a backward C, starting right of the stairs. The landlord had also agreed to do more than a jury-rig fix on the elevator, which was constantly breaking down. The first floor of the building housed an urgent care clinic focused on treating the subcult, though humans were welcome to come in if they needed help. The second floor was home to a daycare and preschool for low-income mothers. The third floor belonged to a yoga and dance studio, and we had the fourth floor. The fifth floor had long remained empty, but someone had finally rented it out, and now we had an alternative care clinic overhead, with a chiropractor, three massage therapists, two acupuncturists, and a nutritionist. The Stone and Needle had brought in a steady stream of clients in the month since it had opened in mid-March. Hearn and I took the elevator to the fourth floor. The car opened right into our waiting room. At night, we locked it to prevent anyone from accessing our floor. Only the janitor and building owner had keys to it besides us. Angel looked up as we entered the building. She was frowning, and before we could even say good morning, she motioned for us to stop at her desk. "The deputy mayor booked an appointment this morning. She'll be here at 10 and wants the entire agency at the meeting. I told her Charlie couldn't be there, but he's going to Skype in to hear what she has to say."
Hearn frowned. "Anytime Maria asks to see us, it usually means trouble."
"She sounded tense. I could tell something's seriously wrong, and it's going to get dumped in our laps." Angel was extremely good at reading people, just by their voice. She had never really utilized her empathic nature before, but now she was working on expanding her abilities, and she had made some remarkable strides, especially during the past month.
"All right. You say she'll be here at 10?
Hearn asked. Angel nodded. "That's what she said. I ordered some pastries and sparkling water."
"I'll be in my office getting ready."
He gave me a quick kiss before disappearing into his office. I sat down in the chair opposite Angel's side of the desk. "I'm so tired. We didn't get home till almost dawn." "Did you find anything?" I shook my head. "Not exactly, but the water elementals in the park say that the spirits are waking up. Spirits that should be long gone." "Not good. But we're probably going to be in for this a lot. I assume we're going to hand the cases off to Raven." Raven Bone Talker didn't work for us, but we occasionally sent cases her way. She was one of the anti-fae, and she was a bone witch. She was also a good friend of ours. "Yeah, and others like her if she gets inundated. I know that Hearn's looking into a few necromancers we might be able to trust." I yawned. "How's Mr. Rumblebutt?" Mr. Rumblebutt was my cat. He was a black Norwegian forest cat, and he adored Angel. So when I stayed at Hearn's, he was absolutely fine until I came home.
"Mr. Rumblebutt was purring up a storm when I left home this morning."
She frowned, staring at me.
"You sure you don't need a nap?"
"Of course I need a nap, but it wouldn't be fair to the rest of you if I took the day off."
"Not fair? Hey, you worked all night. Charlie works at night. You'll notice that he's not here in the morning. Of course he can't be, given he's a vampire."
She pushed a file folder across her desk toward me. "Here's the breakdown of the expenses on the Quattro case. You ended up spending more on the case than you earned from it."
I sighed. Vivi Lind Quattro had hired us to do one thing. She had wanted us to eradicate a serious case of garden gnolls, small but dangerous creatures that like to hang out in gardens. They had the intelligence of a toddler, the temperament of a badger, and they had very sharp teeth. Luckily, unlike Nixie Knacks, they didn't travel in packs.
We had taken the case thinking it would be a simple one, but unfortunately, the Knolls had proven trickier than we expected.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?